Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author J.V. Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you marking your first adventure into my realm, it is a vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis that specialize in a variety of art forms and a plethora of authors we've had recently, and tonight's no different. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me in my epic dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com. Or follow me at JV Hilliard Books on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube. And look for me at JV Hilliard and only JV Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. So as we reach our witching hour, let me cast my message spell here and take control of the magical airwaves of Blog Talk Radio. And for you D&D nerds out there like me, I know you're out there listening, the duration of my transmutation magic is about 30 minutes. So let's set your sundials. And let's enter the realm together. Today, we're going to be chronicling the adventures of a fellow fiction scribe, DC Chase. DC is also a Pittsburgh guy like me. And DC writes in a genre unto his own. He's called it sexpense. It's a mix between sexual situations and suspense. So if you're a fan of mystery, suspense, and some comical situations, I think you're going to be in for a treat. Just imagine Fletch movies meeting Sin City. And if you like that kind of stuff, DC is your next read. So, DC, well met, and welcome to the realm, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. Yeah, well, hey, look, tell the listeners about yourself, what you write, and where they can find you.
Well, you mentioned the sexpence genre that I sort of created, which I have to tell your listeners is about as popular, or has gained about as much traction is a 1980 Chevy Camaro in a snowstorm. So it's been tough sledding, my friend. But yeah,
it's got to start somewhere, man. Book one, right? Book one.
But, you know, it's different. It's unique. Obviously, like you said, I'm from Pittsburgh. And, you know, The Trouble with Marty was my first novel. And, you know, like to be in a show like this to get out there who I am and try to – the sense of humor, if you know, and it's kind of hard to do sarcasm on a radio show like this, or, you know, just an audio, but if you kind of get it, grab the book, because that's exactly what you're going to see in a lot of ways. So excited
well,
to try to bring
everybody,
it.
You know, what is sexpence? How did you create it? And maybe for their benefit and edification, maybe compare your novels to something that our listeners can identify with. So I know I always use the term Mickey Spillane meets like Chevy Chase and Christie Brinkley, or, you know, that kind of stuff. But put it in your own words. Tell them what sexpence is and how you created it all.
Well, you know, it's funny because it goes back, like a lot of people during COVID, we're just sort of sitting around not able to do anything. I hid back in 2011, to take back a step, I was in a situation where I started to do online dating, which was its own sort of trip, but I was like, this is perfect. I'll write a romantic comedy, and I have the perfect go-to stuff in terms of research, because I'm going to be doing this online dating, so it'll be real. I'm not writing about my own stories, obviously, my own experiences, but it'll seem authentic. Well, I got a couple months through that and realized, you know, this is a lot darker than, this isn't going to work. You know, this isn't the place for me. So I kind of shut the book down because I was like, you know what? I don't really feel like a romantic comedy. I want there to be all these different things that are going to happen, and I just don't know how to do that. So during COVID, now it's 9 years later. So I picked that book back up, and I'm like, you know what? Why can't a book be a romantic comedy, have some nice sexual tension to it? Why can't it be a murder mystery? Why can't it have these James Patterson twists and these, oh boy, I didn't see that coming. And the short chapters that give you the feel that you are consuming a lot of information quickly because the chapters are so short. I said, well, I read 50 pages or I read 50 chapters tonight. Wow, I must have read two books. No, actually, you read about half of one of mine because you read about 150 pages. So, you know, sexpence is obviously the combination of the words, obviously, sex and suspense, because it sounds a lot better than, I don't know, sex killer for, you know, sex and thriller. So it sort of came together like, you know, butter and, or in this case, you know, like two things that repel against each other. But it's just the idea of saying, why not? I don't like to just say, well, it's got to be this. We have to be this genre. Why not do something different that, you know, a little independent author? anyone can write a suspense book or a thriller book. It's like, okay, that's great. That's cool. And it could be very interesting. But why don't we add these little elements to it that make it different? You know, to be, when you're a nobody, in the, I don't know, say we're in the middle of nowhere, we're in Pittsburgh, it's, you know, we're not in somewhere in Kansas, in the middle of the country. But when you're a little guy, you either got to be bigger than, less than, or different than. Well, this is certainly different. And when I say less than, I don't think my stuff is any less than any other author's. But the idea is the way it's written and presented. It's done in a format where you're getting a lot of really great content in terms of these quick chapters and the quick pace and the vibe. And that's definitely different. And it's definitely, you know, a little bit less than what you would see some other authors do who write, you know, way more different and, you know, get a different vibe from their novels, which are also great. You know, but like I said, you got to carve out your own little niche somehow.
Or, you know, I think that's a great answer. I you know, as a first time novelist too, I mean, your first book's now available to everybody. They can find it Amazon, you know, et cetera, pretty much ubiquitously. I know you're going to launch an audiobook soon. But, you know, you've got to have goals, right? Like, I know that you're building this into kind of its own series, but I like the idea of it, all of these books also being kind of standalone Dex Spence novels. There's something really cool to that. But, you know, as an author, I mean, what are the goals? Like, what's the next thing? What's your works in progress? What can our listeners expect from you once they pick up your book?
Well, I would say for goals, you know, obviously anybody, I shouldn't say anybody, but most people would say, you know, we got to get an audience, going to make some money doing this, because what's the point of doing it? And yes, that's true. I can't deny that. But to me, it's a broader scope. If I were to look at this from 20,000 feet down, I'm thinking, okay, a little independent guy, DC Chase, I want that to be a brand. I want that to be recognizable. Well, what's it recognizable for? So we talked a little bit about the sex expense part of it. But the other thing is, too, you know, and just to give you a little bit of my background, I'm a two-time dropout in high school. One time I got thrown out, actually. Another time I dropped out, which was, you know, that's its own escapade in itself. I was 23 years old before I even got a GED. And when I finally went to take college exam, you know, the entrance exam at community college, they pulled me aside after they got my results and said, dude, you read at a third grade level. You're not even qualified to be here at a junior, you know, nowhere junior college. So that stuck with me like glue. You know, it was like Velcro or glue or, you know, strong duct tape. And it was hard to get rid of. And part of the thing about being DC Chase is and creating this is, yes, having a platform, even like this, listeners to say, hey, I don't know if you're going to write a best-selling thriller novel or what you'd like to do, but I would give anyone the encouragement to say, just go out and try. The worst thing is to get near 50 years old, which I'm rapidly approaching, and say, damn it, I let so many good years by because I listened to people when I was younger dictate to me about who I was going to be and what I could and couldn't do. That's the biggest mistake a person, in my opinion, can make in their life in terms of letting other people dictate to you. And it's all a lack of confidence, or at least in my opinion, at least in my, when it happened to me, that was my problem. I had no confidence whatsoever. So to hopefully give other people that voice that they might not have themselves, say, listen to this DC Chase guy. He's a mile a minute. It's like he got shot out of a cannon doing it. But listen to what he's saying. It's like I feel like the Deion Sanders primetime of fiction books, right? I'm pumping this up. It's a big game. But you know, he obviously has a lot of attention upon himself. But it's based on faith, and it's based on, you know, and he said, where do I want to go as a goal? Yeah, I want to be successful. But I'll tell you what, you see a lot of people in life that are successful. But what sustains it is because when they sustain it, they don't use the word me. It's we. It's my little group. It's our people that, you know, as it's a football team or whatever it is, it's our group who has been able to do this. No one succeeds on their own. They have a great group of people behind them who help push them. And those people who are successful are going to, yeah, these people helped me get here. And that's kind of what I want to be a part of, is to be something that's way bigger than just me, is to say, yeah, it's we. We put together a little team. We did this little publishing company called Twin Tails Publishing and all that, who did my first book. It's life, not just books, but life in general is so much more than just me. It's and it's got to be we, man. You've got to be able to say we're building, and to be able to give a voice hopefully to other people out there who are listening to this and say, yeah, man, this guy this guy's for me because he does, you know, he's not just talking in a sense where he's going into great detail and he's about a specific book. He's talking about life. And that's something I want to see what this guy's doing, because that's a different vibe. That's just a different set of things than we're used to hearing, I would think. So, you know, it's, that answer may have been all over the place, all over the map, but to me, it's a large area to encompass and to reach and to travel through. So it should be a big answer.
Well, you know, that's an amazing story, first of all. I mean, for someone who was told at the collegiate level that they have a third grade reading, grade, and then to go out there and write your own book, and now books with a plural, shows a lot. It's really inspirational in many respects. And I think that our listeners, should give you a shot just on the basis of that story alone. It's almost worth its own read. Because I don't want to say it's funny, it's a serious story, but it's one that you've clearly overcome and been able to, to live a life's dream as an author doing this. Not everybody can do that. There's a lot of people that want to write books. Very few mm-hmm. people actually do. And now you're on the board, man. You got one with more to come. So speaking of which, I know every writer has their own style, right? Like I'm a big planner. I can't write at all. I'm stuck in the mud if I don't know where I'm writing to. And it takes a long time to kind of plan my stuff up. But when I'm done, I fire through it because I know the story front to back and, inside out. What's your writing style like? I mean, and I mean that not as a planner or a pantser or any of that stuff, but more since you're writing in such a unique way with these short chapters in your own kind of genre. What is the DC Chase writing style like?
Well, I had my first Dennis Miller reference or analogy earlier with the 80 Chevy Camaro. So you guys were talking a little bit of baseball before I come on. So I'm going to give you my baseball analogy with this answer. And I used to be really big into baseball, but that's a whole other story for another show. But let's compare. Let's use the analogy of baseball pitchers being the writer and the batter being the reader, okay, if you can picture that. So someone like yourself, you're Garrett Cole. You got a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. You got the wipeout slider. You can drop the curveball, drop the hammer on that, do all those fancy pitches. And what's the purpose of doing that? To keep the batter off balance. Or in writing, you keep your, and guessing. Same thing with being a writer and the reader. You've got to be able to keep your reader guessing, in my opinion, as to what you're doing, because if you can't hold that audience in someone reading a single book, they're going to close it and say, this was boring. I'm not having, this isn't any fun. I can already figure out what's going to happen, or it's not engaging enough. Well, I'll tell you what, I was not born with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball and a cutting slider. You know what I mean? I got a knuckleball. So my analogy is to my readers, they see this pitch coming up to the plate and that thing's dancing all over the place and it's twisting and it's floating and like a butterfly that you don't know if it's going to go over the catcher's head, bounce in the dirt, go back behind the batter, wherever it's going to go. But the idea of what I'm doing and what you guys, what someone like you were doing is the same kind of effect, to whereas I'm keeping the reader, the baseball analogies, it would be the batter, but in my sense, the reader, off balance, is they don't know what's going. They don't know what's coming. The suspense thing we talked about, the short chapters, the feel of God, the comedy, but oh my God, there's a murder mystery in here too. And then how is this? How is this going to come together? So I think the element of my writing style is just that, man. It's a throw it at the wall and see what sticks. I am like four steps removed from even what you would consider to be a pantser to be. In terms of, I'll just sort of go with it. I'm way beyond that, to the right of that thing. I have no idea what's going on. But I just stick to these short. Good. It sounds crazy. I'll give you another analogy here. Say you were a sketch artist and you had like a nice white pad of paper with like, 30, 40 sheets in it. You're sketching picture after picture after picture on these sheets. And what do? You start taking it and you flip it so that the pictures start to move, right? So that now you have a moving picture with all these sketches that you've created. When you do these short chapters and do this effect, and hopefully if you do it right, hopefully I have, you get a moving picture in the sense that you get all these short little chapters. Where are all these short chapters going? What is it? Damn it, I got to the end of the book. This is a full novel. And that, to me, is you know, magicians don't reveal their craft, right? It's you got to know the code. You got to be a magician to know the craft. Being
a
writer,
yep.
I would not tell anyone to suggest, yeah, do what I do, because it would probably drive you nuts. You have to be insane and be willing to say, I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea what's going on in my life. I'm sort of just like floating around like a knuckleball. Damn it, this is how I succeed. How I can this is again all getting back to how do I find my niche? How do I find readers? People are going to look at that and say, I've never really come across something like this. Even just listening to me talk on this show, I'm sure your listeners are like, where did this guy come from? How much, you know, how much Pepsi Cola did he drink before the show? You know, he's so hyped up. where's this coming from, Joe? We're ready. You know, we're ready for the D&D stuff. Who is this guy? So, like I said, it's I appreciate the Vine, and I hope my answers. Again, it's like the Coach Prime, where he says, you know, we're coming, baby, we're coming. You don't realize it. You think it's a joke. You think like, oh, this guy's just a talker. No, read it. Read The Trouble with Marty, and you know, get to know me on social media a little bit. And you know, you may it might not be your cup of tea, but you might just say, man, this guy's just so off the wall. I got to see what this is. And, you know,
well, you know, when I first read your stuff, man, it's definitely different. I kind of compared it. I used the term earlier, you know, the sort of like Mickey Spillane meets Chevy Chase. It's definitely it's a live Fletch movie with a little dark, you know, murder mystery in it, man. It's like Sin City. It's and it has a noir feel to it. It's the coolest. It's so different. You're right. And your books are, digestible enough that it's not a long read, and you're firing through chapters, you're making progress as you go. I think it's something that, you know, people are going to love. So I would encourage everyone to give it a shot. But let me throw this out at you, because we talked about what you've done. We talked about why you've done it. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I know this is coming in a series, but they're all standalones in a series, which is cool too. You can read any of the books in any of the orders, and it's going to kind of pick you around. You know, but, you know, talk a little bit about your upcoming projects. I know we got The Trouble with Marty out and running. What's the next? When can we expect it? What's going on with it?
Well, if for the thousands and thousands of my readers, which, again, you can't tell sarcasm over the phone, but the people who have read The Trouble with Marty, the beginning of The Hustle, you know, the first couple chapters are at the end of that book. And The Hustle, we may change the name. There's a lot of things up in the air with the second book yet in terms of how it's going to get done and that type of thing. But the idea behind what is now called The Hustle is, you know, the first book was an estate attorney called Marty. The second book, you're going to meet an 18-year-old boy who has just graduated from high school named Artie Morrison. And what I would compare The Hustle to is if you or anybody listening to this was a fan of the movie American Pie, you're going to love this, because it's all the satirical humor and sexual situations and, you know, a young guy who's 18 years old who's, you know, looking to have sex, you know, for the first time, that type of thing. But in Artie's case, he's got like a lot of women that, you know, his age, early 20s, that really are taking to him. And he's sort of trying to figure out, you know, what to do. He's my revenge on what I thought my life should have been at 18, Joe. It's like, yeah, there's women around me. What am I going to do? And, you know, Artie is what I wanted my life to be at 18. He's a baseball pitcher. Artie's not a knuckleball pitcher, by the way, but it's an American Pie feel. And it's like, yeah, it's all this sexual, not, I say sexual stuff. I'm not talking about like erotic sex scenes. We're just talking, you know, good old fashioned American, you know, sexual tension. I think, I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. And then all of a sudden, whoa, there's a murder mystery. How is it? And the idea of The Hustle is, who's being hustled? You think you know who's being hustled. And the greatest thing at the end of the book is that the reader looks at it and says, oh, my God, was I the one who was hustled? Not because you didn't get enjoyment and get your money's worth out of a book, but because you're like, you know, I read the book I kind of didn't look at the book the way he was. It's a book inside of a book in the sense that I think I'm reading it the right way. Then I get to the end and I'm like, oh my God, I didn't see the signs. I should have been looking at it this way, if that makes sense to you. And that I think it's going to be a really fantastic addition to this Hot to Trot series. Obviously Marty Wheeler's not in it, but like you said, it's a lot. All the books take place here in Brentwood, a suburb outside of Pittsburgh to the south. So a lot of the characters, there's three or four characters are in Marty, obviously merge over into the Artie Morrison story because it's all in the same area. So like I said, I would
you know,
say it's
that's cool, man. That's real cool. I like the, you know, you already answered my next question in a way, but I want you to answer it directly. I mean, there's, you know, are there characters in your book that are similar to you? You mentioned Artie as kind of like what you would have wanted to be at 18. Is Marty what you want to be at 47? Or do you see other people and bake them into your books and just change their names, you know, to protect the innocent, you know, that kind of stuff? I mean, have you gotten inspiration from anybody you know that since you're doing this, like the style where you're writing locally?
Well, to get back to the trouble with Marty, I'm a government worker, Joe. You know, I probably should keep that a secret because of government workers, and that's all on the down low. But I worked in the city-county building in downtown Pittsburgh in room 216 of the city-county building. And let me tell you something. You've never met more characters in your life, per square inch, than were in that room. Paul, his sidekick Frankie, Mary Bess, the woman named Blondie, were all, and my old boss Sean had a cameo in it. Those are all people I worked with. And I worked with these people for so long, and I kept thinking, the guy who's Paul Noble in the book, Paul, the real Paul, is the biggest showman you've ever seen. He's Tim Conway. He just doesn't know the Carol Burnett show went off the air 30 years ago or 40 years ago. But he is
Jeez,
so
man, that's
fun.
That's a vague reference, man.
Well
done.
We're pulling off tonight. But Paul was so funny, but his comedy was so deadpan. And I worked with the guy for 10 years, and I thought he was drop-dead serious and was just like this limbering guy who just was really down and out and didn't like talking to people. But that's not Paul at all. But, you know, as far as Marty Wheeler, we dealt with so many estate attorneys, and they'd come in with their, you know, seven-piece suits and all buttoned up and with their attaché case and coming in, I have returns. All these big words attorneys use. When you're around attorneys a lot, they use the word said a million times in a sentence. Said return, said this, said that, said schedule. It's always referenced to like something legal. So Marty himself wasn't based on anyone in particular, but certainly the realm of an estate attorney who I hope the guys who do that wouldn't take themselves too seriously. Marty, and I don't know if Marty was actually based off of, if you guys ever saw the show Goliath on Amazon Prime. I think it was Billy Bob Thornton. I can't remember who played the main character, but he was the thought for who Marty wanted to be, an attorney who hung out of the bar. That was like his home away from home at the bar. That was the original concept for Marty, but, state attorney? Boom. Who knows more about estate work and estate planning? And there you go. So, yeah, that I think, you know, would be what you're looking at here.
Yeah, you extracted a lot from people. I find that authors are very observant people. They might not always be the most extroverted people, but they pick up on the most vague things, sometimes the most subtle things, and you can build a good character around a single subtle trait, something that's unique to that person. I think that, you know, I do that in my books. I've read your stuff. I know you do it in yours. But look, hey, I hate to do this because we're coming to the end of our show. And I do this with every one of our guests. We go into a lightning round, right? And so the rules of the lightning round are there are no rules. I'm going to throw a bunch of questions at you. You are supposed to answer them quickly. But if you say something that's kind of cool and we want to go into it a little bit, we can do that too. So there are no rules here. If you're ready to play, I'm ready to ask questions. Let me know when you're ready to go. You ready to play the lightning round?
Let's press your luck, Joe.
All right, man. So I wasn't going to ask you this, but you mentioned knuckleballer before, so I had to make up a question on the fly here. Your DC Chase's favorite MLB knuckleballer of all time?
Joe, how could it not be Tim Wakefield? What many people
I figured you would go there. Former Pirate, former Red Sox. I figured you'd fall into that category. But I thought you might be a Phil Niekro guy, one of those Charlie Hoff guys. You never know. Never know. Yeah. All right, we'll go with Tim Wakefield. Get you on the board with that one. That was an easy one, a little softball question for you. Next one, I also know, I just happen to know you're obsessed with NCAA college football. And so I'm going to ask you to go out on a limb and predict the four college playoff teams this year, 1, 2, 3, and 4. And in your opinion, who wins the national championship?
God, this is going to be tough. I think Georgia is probably a no-brainer. go off the wall, I'm going to say Miami Hurricanes and two other teams. I think LSU, if the SEC stays in form with how they're somehow managing able to get two teams into the playoffs, I think LSU might sneak in. Their quarterback's probably the best quarterback in college football. And a fourth team, cross between Michigan and Penn State. I think one of those two teams, I think Penn State may eventually get over the hump and finally sneak past Michigan and or Ohio State to get in. But I'll give you five teams. I'll say either Michigan or Penn State is the fourth team.
Well, who wins it then? Who's the champ?
Well, you know, it all depends on the matchups because it depends on which two of those get seeded against each other.
You're cheating.
Yeah, well,
I asked you. Give me a champ. I want a champ. Who's hoisting the trophy?
I like LSU. Don't ask me why, but I'm going to say LSU.
All right. Good. So I also happen to know you, and I know you're a big cat person. And I know you recently just got a new cat. But if you were going to get your next cat tomorrow, what would your next cat's name be?
Mr. Marbles.
What? But where did that come from?
Well, it's a lightning round, Joe. We don't have time to extract it.
Well played. You're on the board. All right. So if your books get cast in the movies, who plays Marty Wheeler?
Oh, God. What's the guy's name that played Mickey Mantle in the movie 61? Was it Thomas Jane?
I don't know.
I can't think of the guy's name, but I want to say that's what the guy's name is. Whoever played
kind
Mickey Mantle.
Has that feel to it?
What's that?
Has that kind of feel to it? You feel him as Marty Wheeler?
I think he looks like Marty Wheeler.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. In your head, then that's the match. Okay. So last question, and it comes in two parts. Imagine if you're summoned to a private and a secret dinner for authors only. When you get there are three other authors already around the table and one seat left for you at the table. Who are those other three authors around the table? And they could be dead or alive.
Oh, boy. I guess I could say Alfred Hitchcock. I guess he wrote a lot of weird little things. He's known, obviously, for the TV show. But I would go that just to see where he came up with all those crazy ideas. I hate to say it because it's so mainstream, but I'd probably say Stephen King if it was like 1980 and I could ask him how he did Salem's Lot and Carrie and stuff like that. And, of course, my favorite author of all time, how could I not say James Patterson?
All right. So the second part of this question is if you could ask them only one question, not one apiece, but only one question, what would that question be?
What would that question be? How long did it take before you really felt like you were making an impact in terms of gaining an audience and feeling that stories were good enough to get out there?
Well, there you go. Well, look, man, we're coming to the end of the duration of my magic spell here, and I can feel the magic fading from my wizard's eyes. But before we leave, I want to thank you again, DC Chase, for allowing me to conjure you into my realm tonight, only if it was for just a short time. And, DC, before we go, tell everyone where they can find you and your books.
Yeah, DCChase.com's got a little bio of what I'm up to. It's got a link to The Trouble with Marty, and obviously, they'll direct you to Amazon, and my social media is at DC Chase Novels, and I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Well, DC, again, it's been a pleasure to have you. Very unique interview. Loved it. I hope that our listeners, I know that I don't have to hope. I know that they liked it. Thanks again. Welcome back anytime. And to our followers, thank you very much for lending your ear today. Until the next time, I am JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you.